Welcome to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve is about helping kids get good grades in school and succeeding in life. It's for all parents, teachers, and students, as all of life is a learning curve, and you succeed in life to the extent that you can learn easily. Today's guest is Mary Bass, who is the founder and president of Tools of Learning for Children. Today's show discusses how do you start your child off on the learning curve and helping them become literate and able to read at a young age. What are the steps and sequential steps that they go through on this learning curve? How is it that kids can get damaged in preschool and kindergarten, which then scars them for the rest of their educational progress? This is something you need to know in order to protect your children before they go on to grade school. Kids love to discover. How do you harness this natural love of learning in your child? And much, much more. So stay tuned with Mary Bass and Roger and Virginia on The Learning Curve. Mary is the founder and president of Tools of Learning for Children. The website that you all really ought to go to is toolsforpreschool.org. Now that four there is the numeral four, not the word four. It's all one word, toolsforpreschool.org. Murray is an 84-year-old, highly principled man dedicated to the cause of helping kids become literate. His background is he's actually got a bachelor's degree in English and in psychology, and also a master's degree in industrial psychology. And as further background, his son was found to be dyslexic way back, because as being an 83-year-old gentleman, he and I both talk ancient history together. In order to handle the dyslexia of his son, he had to sort of solve the problem. And the thing that I find about Murray in chatting with him and in reading his works, by the way, he's a columnist. He does a weekly column. Murray, where's that weekly column?
In Fairfield, California, for the Daily Republic.
So he writes still very frequently. The thing I like about his writing is that his philosophy is in finding what works and using it. I'm all for that. So welcome, Murray.
Thank you.
My first question, Murray, is when do you start with a child on this program?
Normally, different schools, different ways. Normally, a child, a three-year-old, can learn the alphabet song and vowel song, and so that they get exposed to that before the pre-K school. And then it's when they're in 4 years old in the regular pre-K preschool, then they get exposed to the workbook and the lessons, regular lessons. But I have to say that learning the vowel song and the alphabet song, once they've learned that, they know all the letter names and sounds, which is their 90% of the way to the phonemic awareness. And then the lessons themselves marry those sounds and names to the physical letters. And then once that's done, they are ready to start blending reading. So it's, mm-hmm. Yeah, but the answer to the question is...
As young as 3-year-old.
Yeah.
That's Virginia's experience as well. And with Montessori, you were dealing with children that young age.
Oh, yes, 3 to 6.
Yeah, this actually is not conventional wisdom, but it's actually what works. And it would be wonderful if parents could get this phonics course to use at home, because we find that, of course, parents are the child's first and best teacher.
So, actually, I'd like to ask you a question. I read in your frontline description about your frontline, it says, after learning 5 letters, the student reads words. And after learning 8 letters, they actually read sentences. Can
That's
you
right.
tell me more about that?
This is an unusual thing. This is not ABCDE. They learn 5 letters, and then they can read words like Pam and Sam and the letters, the words that those letters will make. And then after they learn another 3 letters, then they can have, there are enough words that they can put together sentences. And then each book, there is a series, the first, there's a series of 13 books, first 3 books are just words only. And then the next 10 books are books that have sentences, and each one of these also has sight words, and each one of them has a comprehension test. So you're not just talking about reading stuff, you're talking about testing as you go along to see if they understand what they've been doing. So it's really a very thorough system, and it really works, it really does. Kids have a lot of fun with it.
I like that part where you're actually testing for competence. That's a key part to education, having kids learn the theory side of it and experience the knowledge, the gain of the knowledge, but then have them use it and demonstrate competence. That's terribly important because in your current schools, kids are simply dragged through this assembly line of being indoctrinated, and they don't get the opportunity to either complete any subject or area of study, and they sure as hell don't get the opportunity to apply it and demonstrate it in class.
So question for you about being tested or assessed, I guess would be a better word, being assessed at the end of each book, is what happens if the student doesn't really, hasn't really grasped what that book was teaching? What happens at that point?
Well, I think we do it again. One of the principles that's involved is practice, practice, practice. And it isn't as though you just read this thing one time. Practice, practice. So that answering your question, I don't really believe that normally it's a problem when kids can read 3 and 4 word sentences, and then the question is asked, well, what is this about? You know, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I should say this. I'm a guy who tries to do this stuff, but I have never taught a kid to read successfully.
Now, that's an honest man.
Well, see, my own son is able to do it. That's motivated me to get involved here. I'm not a preschool teacher. I have observed a lot, and I have seen wonderfully creative people. For example, one of our teachers has her kids learning the days of the week and the calendar and what day is this? Is day 12. Also has them learning to count by twos, threes, fours, and fives instead of just 1 to 10 like the schools want you to. But they also, one of the teachers uses sign language so that the kids are communicating more complex things before they even master language. Just really remarkable. But what that does, that reinforces their ability to learn language. You know, talking about numbers, one of the things that happens to me all the time is I continue to learn from the teachers and the directors at the preschools. One of our schools uses a CD called Math Concepts that's put out by a company called IntelliTunes in Red Bluff, California. And what this is, music-based teaching of mathematics. And it really works wonderfully. IntelliTunes does a great job. And they're really well-known, I think, throughout the country.
So what's the principle behind it? Just the rhythms expressing the maths involved, or what?
The rhythms plus the language. The kids learn to sing the songs that teach them how to count by different numbers. But what it does is it broadens their perspective on the number system itself. And so kids go to this preschool, can read a calendar, they know days of the week, they can read the clock, and they can also...
That's pretty advanced for a preschooler.
Well, that's, yeah.
But it's things they learn at that age.
Well, see, the thing about it is that our system says that things have to happen in a sequence.
I noticed that was point 4 on your little list here, Murray.
Yes.
Kids can learn out of sequence.
Yes. Can you explain something about that?
Yeah, sure. The normal system is that you have to learn how to hold a pencil, then you learn how to use a pencil, and then all that sort of stuff. And all of this happens before you get into any language. But the truth is that a 3-year-old, before they learn how to hold a pencil, can learn to sing the vowel song or the alphabet song.
And ask for something.
Yes.
And certainly ask a question, because at that age, they're monster interested in things. They're like sponges of knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Discovery is terrific for them.
You know, And yet the dummies who run the educational system somehow seem to think that they have problems learning.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what the PhD at the university said, you know.
I tell you, we ought to take care of the system, we old guys. I mean, so you have point two here. The first point was, when do you start with the children, and then how do you offer it? Is there a simple answer on that, or we already covered it?
What happens is that kids become ready for this at different times, and in different ways, but one child will be ready to accept the information at 3 years old, another one at 4.5. Yeah. And what you do is you keep offering it to them until they're ready. You don't force them or anything like that, but then when they're ready, they take off like crazy.
That's Virginia's thing, Virginia. Your Montessori thing, you follow a child's interest.
Absolutely. That's a really huge basic for Montessori, is you always follow the child's interest. You never force them to do anything.
Sure. Well, incidentally, Virginia, we do have one Montessori school.
Oh, do you? Very good. Very good.
How are they? Way ahead of the curve and getting it done probably with stellar results?
Well, I want to tell you the truth. I haven't singled them out in terms of the...
No, you've got to be politically correct. You've got to live with these people out there. Your point three here, Murray, make fundamental skills the top priority, the only priority if necessary.
Yeah, we discussed this briefly. We need to ensure that the kids have these skills before we move on to anything else. And what's happening right now is that we're teaching them everything from kindergarten on, except basic skills. I don't know whether... So I'm just saying the basic skills, the fundamental skills, are what everything else is built on, and that you need to get those things first and not worry about the other things until you have proficiency in fundamental skills.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. When I was in London, up in Islington, or sometimes pronounced Islington, which is a northern suburb in London, I lived there for nearly 20 years. In the 60s and 70s. The educational system in England was being sort of destroyed and reorganized, and this particular school was being very innovative, and their idea was let the kids learn what they wanted to learn. There was no particular curriculum, there was no basics that ought to be learned, so the kids just sat around and played things like chess and games all the time. Didn't learn anything. In other words, it was a government-funded daycare success.
Well.
I mean, your point five is always have fun. You're a good example of that, by the way.
Yeah, I think one of the big reasons that we have the problems with here in California is that somewhere along the line, someone decided that learning is work. For example, I saw one of the early childhood education teachers wrote an article about how not making the kids work, talking about homework and stuff like that. Well, the guy just has it so completely wrong, is that kids love discovery. So you give them an opportunity to discover different things, different ways, you know? The whole idea that learning is work for kids is crazy.
Yeah, in the sense of the word work as he was using it, yeah, it is crazy.
So how can parents get involved in this?
How can parents get involved in it? Well, they are involved in it. In our program, what we do is we provide a CD that has an alphabet song, a vowel song, every vowel has two sounds, musical lessons for each letter. The CD is a take-home thing. The parents work with a child, or put it in the cars, the CD player, whatever, and they support the learning of the kid, phonemic awareness primarily. And some schools also send workbook home, but anyhow, parents are designed to have parents involved in it.
Well, we observe that the kids that do best at school are those kids who have parents who are involved very often, and also set correct standards for the kids to emulate, and correct expectations, and also, which I see you also see as your point nine, appropriately reward the children for accomplishment. And the rewards can be in various forms. Just simply praise and acknowledgement is a fine reward.
Sure.
They don't have to be bribes.
Say, part of this, the program is that we have punch-out figures that are cute for each letter. And as they learn each letter, they get this punch-out figure as a reward that will fit on the refrigerator or whatever, you know, so that there is a record of rewards as a record of achievement. And so it's you know, it's pretty well designed. And then there are other rewards too, as you see. That's the human part of this, you know. You reward achievement, and that's a lesson that not only has to do with learning language, but a lesson that has to do with life.
So during summer break, when kids are not in school, are there things parents can do to keep the children learning, or at least not losing what they have learned?
Sure. That is to continue the reading process. One of the things that our next project, as a matter of fact, is we're going to try to partner with the library and others to have a summer reading program. And that summer reading program will have books that the children can keep, that will have some concrete rewards for them. And the objective is, rather than lose the skills that they have obtained, to build on them so that when they get to kindergarten, they will blow the kindergarten teacher out of the tub, so to speak. And, and actually...
So that's your reward, is it?
Actually, if you follow this program, and if the kids follow it and the teachers follow it, and they retain it, that kids will be reading mid-first grade level when they're through.
Very interesting thing came to mind as you're talking about rewards and rewarding and having a summer reading program. You just triggered for me that we have a local bank that will reward kids for reading. If they can show that they have read 10 books, they will get $10 deposited into their savings account.
Mm-hmm.
Nice reward.
That's the kind of thing. I hadn't thought about banks, but that's a win-win situation for the bank.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I thought this is the kind of thing where you go around to all of the merchants that serve children and say, hey, can you donate some rewards for this program? And I'm sure that we'd be able to get it. And also, you know, groups like McDonald's and things like that would be happy to participate in it.
You may want to try talking to some credit unions. They may be very interested in setting up young saver accounts and things like that.
Okay, that's a good idea.
This way the kids also start to have financial literacy.
Virginia teaches it, Larry, to adults. It's true, she does actually teach it to these adults.
Yeah.
So I see your point 9 here is you don't accept failure. You stay the course until the kids are proficient in fundamental skills. Those are the basis for all other learning. And the 10th point you have here is put resources where they will be effective. Build before salvaging, you say.
Yeah, and this is basically, we talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. This is to build your foundations and put your money there instead of, it's really not instead of, but right now we're spending most of our money on kids who have failed, and we're trying to rescue them and trying to keep them out of jail and giving them programs that are not really solving their problem.
I mean, the damage is done at the level where you're addressing the child and making them competent. The fact of life is kids get damaged in preschool and kindergarten, and then that damage mars them, scars them, and it carries forward and screws up their later learning. Now, I think you've got the right idea at the right stage of the game. And your point 11 is keep practicing during the off periods so their skills aren't lost. And I'll agree with that one, mate. Murray, it's been a lot of fun chatting with you, old-timer.
Well, what I hope that we can do with this is that I've tried to build a program that is a model so that if someone in New York City or Baltimore wants to do the same thing that we're doing, we can help them build a sanctuary for children in their community and help them teach 5,000 kids how to read.
Yeah, that's a winner.
There's one other thing I kind of wanted to mention, and that is, as I told you earlier, I keep learning. One of the things I learned is that there are a lot of other things out there that we might be able to do to help kids besides just reading. I think I mentioned that Ron Brown's IntelliTunes teaches kids the basics of fundamentals of mathematics. And that's one of the things that we're doing now is getting some of his CDs out to our schools so that we can maybe begin to introduce higher concepts of mathematics to the kids. There's a lot of potential things as we go along, and I just want to say, okay, reading is the only thing that we do. What we're interested in is we're interested in making kids successful, whatever it takes. I want to tell you this. I really appreciate your having me as your guest.
Well, you're doing wonderful work there, Murray, and I do applaud you for it. If you'd like to contact Murray, he can be reached on this phone number, 707-427-0744, and give him a hand and help him out with some dollars if you're able to so he can continue this work. Or he can be reached on his email at mbass, that's M-B-A-S-S, mbass25@sbcglobal.net. Our next week's guest is Melissa Binstock, who's now a 22-year-old college student and author of the book Nourishment, Feeding My Starving Soul When My Mind and Body Betrayed Me. This is a tragic story that Melissa has to convey to you all. It's the story of a young girl who, when she was in preschool and in grade school, was effectively mismanaged, misdiagnosed, and betrayed by the current school establishment, and was put on all kinds of psychiatric drugs because she was the usual alphabet soup of wrong diagnoses. And the side effects were tragic, almost ruined her life, and she had to recreate herself and salvage herself because her parents knew no better. And this is a story that you really need to hear so that you can make sure that your child doesn't suffer what Melissa suffered when she went through grade school in the current mill, the production mill that is U.S. education. So next week, we'll see you again on The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia.